Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning. Welcome to Driven to Business, where we try to talk about business ideas, life, and have fun doing it. My name is Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're streaming live as we speak on biz1190.com. And today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. We have a great guest today. Patrick Norris, a managing partner with the Atlanta Law Group, is with us. Welcome to Driven to Business, Patrick.
Thanks, Eddie. Appreciate you having me.
Patrick, tell us about the Atlanta Law Group, start with, what you guys do over there primarily, and how you became involved with the firm.
Sure. Well, you know, we're always joke with people, Eddie. I always say the best part about my job is I don't have to deal with other lawyers that often. We're mostly transactional attorneys, so we don't go to court that often. If we do, usually it's something rather minor. So we do, you know, most of our clients are either families or small businesses. So we work with a lot of, you know, young families that are getting started and having their children. A lot of those people, you know, happen to be business owners too. And we also, you know, have guys that come in who start with us as business owners, and then we end up working with their family. So we do a lot of wills, trust and estate planning, contracts, and, you know, small deals for their company. We also do a lot of tax work and a little private equity as well.
Are you one of the founders of this group, or did you join it later?
Yeah, we started in March of 2014. So I had my own practice, which was Norris Legal, in 2011. And we merged with the Cantley Law Firm, and my partner Beckett Cantley and I, we'd been working together for a year or two and started this in March of 2014 to kind of combine resources, be able to provide more services to, you know, our business owners.
Hey, to kind of step back a little bit from your own practice here, just I'm sure you know people, many of us outside the legal profession, we sort of have a love-hate relationship with lawyers. You know, we don't like you unless we need you, then we really like you. And give us your thoughts on that whole concept.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the best lawyer jokes I've ever heard was that they said, you know, nobody likes lawyer jokes because the people who aren't attorneys don't think they're jokes and the lawyers don't like them. So I kind of get that. You know, I think it's one of those things where, you know, when you really need a lawyer, if you're fortunate enough to get a good one, you can definitely build relationships. Like, I like to think that, you know, most of my clients like me, you know, because I provide value and they see meaning. But there's definitely, you know, I think as an attorney, it's all about the way you run your business. If you're, you know, the things that tend to get on people's nerves are, you know, when you go to lunch with a lawyer and you buy him lunch and then you get a bill for it or something like that. So, you know, if we can do a good job of, you know, wearing our client service hat, I like to think that there are ways to have good relationships with your clients.
I used to joke with one of my attorneys one time, and I knew the guy pretty well. We'd be on the phone and we'd be talking about a ball game or something. I said, "This is not on a clock, is it?" He'd say, No. This is not on the clock."
Well, I have people, when I go to lunch with somebody, they always jump to get the check because they'll always say, "If I pay for your lunch, that way I know you're not going to bill me for this." But, you know, we don't do a ton of hourly work. You know, for example, that's one of the things we do. I mean, there are certain types of cases that I'm very upfront with clients, and I'll say, look, you know, it's going to make sense for us and you to go hourly because we don't know where this is going to go. It could get wrapped up in a day or two, or it could go on for a couple weeks. And I think, you know, in those types of situations, clients get it. But, you know, we do a lot of flat fee work. I mean, it is easier in what we do because a lot of ours is transactional. We kind of know what's going to go with it. So, you know, if we can do a flat fee with a client, we're happy to do that any time. So I think it's just a matter of being creative and, you know, being client friendly when you can be.
Patrick, you guys tend to, you sort of said you have a little bit of a specialty area, and I've noticed these days that lawyers do specialize. I have had my own experience with attorneys where I would talk to someone and say, "Well, that's not really my area of practice. You need to call." Mm-hmm. They usually give me somebody else's name to call and talk about that. I had you might be interested in this. I had this last week. I volunteered for Junior Achievement Day at a local middle school there near where I live, and I'd never done this before. So they put me with no training at all in a classroom of sixth graders, and said and gave me a few lessons to go over. Well, one of the things in there we talked about was careers, and surprisingly, one of the careers the kids asked me about was, how do you get to be a lawyer? That's just one of the sixth graders asked that question. So we went sort of through, okay, well, you know, this is a path. most lawyers, you know, you need to obviously finish middle school and high school and go to college, and then you get a law degree. You know, we kind of go through the path of that. But, you know, it was a little surprising. You do get your kids asked, because kids do view, you know, lawyers and doctors and other professionals, you guys are, although, you know, we all make jokes about you, you are actually pretty well-respected members of the business community. And I think it's a good thing. Imagine sixth graders asking how to become attorneys.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good thing. I mean, like I say, I think it's one of those things where I'd like to think, at least, I guess, where when people need us, you know, that the jokes and the things that we do get a lot, you know, that seems to kind of change once you're, because we do, I mean, I tell people all the time, you know, I'm a professional problem solver. I mean, that's right. Really how I view myself. I mean, people call me when they have problems, and a lot of times they're very serious. And if you get to the point where you call a lawyer or you call a doctor, it's because you feel like you've lost control of the situation.
Right.
And, you know, if we go in there and fix something for somebody, that obviously is not a joke, and it can really change people's lives.
Is there let's say someone coming out of law school these days, and just given you've been practicing law for a good while, is there an especially like hot area of law that really is the most sexy part of law to get into these days? Is there something going on in that area?
Well, you know, if you the personal injury guys, they're the ones that get all the glory. If you want to be on a bus or a billboard, that's probably the way to go. I think this is not something we do, but personally, and I've people gave me this advice even when I was coming out of school, and I think it's still relevant. I think healthcare, being a healthcare attorney is, you know, you're not going to have to worry about job security for a long time.
I would also wonder about with there's changes going on in the way we all do business with the internet and some of the, there's still questions about copyright law and all those kinds of things as we are into the sort of a new era really on how we're going to do it. And then I know that a lot of states are having problems figuring out how they can and cannot tax this, and, you know, big fusses and fights among that. So I think that'd be sort of an exciting, although awfully new, area of law that's still sort of being case law being decided, I think, almost every day about how it's going to work.
Yeah, I think so too. And with the intellectual property stuff, you know, I think on an international level, I think there's very interesting, you know, where that goes. I mean, you see, you know, I think some of the backlash from, you know, U.S. companies going into China and doing business, you know, the 10, 20 years ago, now you've seen all the, you know, the intellectual property theft that's going on with that. So how that gets monitored as the world continues to, you know, become more global, I think is, you know, anything like that, it's going to be around. It's the same with what we do. You know, we write wills, so people are always going to be born. You've always got new people. The wills are always going to be there. Taxes are always going to be there. Intellectual property is always going to be there. So there are definitely, you know, certain things that are always just going to be around.
You know, advice I was given years ago by, actually even while I was working for another guy in Texas, is, you know, when we would talk about entering a business agreement with somebody, and that could take any kind of a form where you're either pursuing, you're going to take a project and you're going to have part of it, or you're going to actually do a joint venture somewhere or whatever, you know. And my boss, who was a pretty wealthy guy out there, had always said, you know, he said, Eddie, you know, never enter into an agreement with a crook, no matter what the lawyer tells you. He said, don't ever enter an agreement with a crook, because he said, you know, they're crooks are crooks, no matter whether those on the paper or not. I've always found that pretty good advice, actually, is the idea of, if you're going to have an agreement with somebody and have a lawyer map it out, what you really have the lawyer doing is just make sure everybody's very clear on what we're agreeing to here, and everybody signs off on it, you know, and you're assuming, at least I do, good faith on everybody's part here. And if somebody has demonstrated in the past bad faith, I've always followed that advice. I just don't do anything with them. It doesn't matter what they want to sign in the way of an agreement.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, I think two things. One thing is, any agreement's better than nothing. I mean, I've literally had guys come in with literally, you know, things that were written on a napkin at lunch.
Right.
So, you know, I think we can laugh about that, but it's probably better than having nothing. I mean, I have, and the one that came in on a napkin, it was actually, you know, the guy stuck to the agreement. They made an agreement on a napkin. They both signed it. And, you know, we were brought in to basically finish out what they had already mapped out. So I think having some kind of, that as much as getting it in writing, it's the idea of having a conversation and talking about things and knowing how certain situations will be handled in advance, and that just reduces, you know, the level of conflict that can, the potential for conflict. And you know, the second thing you mentioned that jumped out is yeah, doing business with other people. I mean, going back to the, you know, with technology now, it's so much easier to get a, you know, a business owner in Atlanta who's looking at a potential deal with a guy in Detroit or California or somewhere all the way across the country. And you don't know this. You may not have a personal connection to those people. And, you know, so we certainly, it's not something we do, but we talk to people about, you know, how well do you know this person? Have you run a, should you run a background check on them and do things like that? I mean, we've definitely had deals like that that went poorly for our clients where they didn't take our advice on stuff like that. So you have to, you know, I grew up in a small town and I just trusted everybody growing up. But after doing this for a while, you, to some extent, you do become a little cynical, I guess, and start to think about, you know, who's on the other side of this thing.
You do. I've had almost an opposite experience. We had, and what you said, we've had that too in many, many cases. In fact, some of these agreements have actually saved our bacon in a few times, even though it wasn't a particular antagonistic. Just going back and said, no, we agreed to this. We didn't, and the guy will say, oh, you're right, we did. I mean, and just having that agreement sort of clears the air. Like, no, we discussed this already, and yeah, we're doing this, just so there's no bad faith on anybody's part. Here, I did have a deal where I was going to buy a business from a friend of mine, or buy a portion of it, and he and I had been friends. He's passed away now, but we were friends for a long, long time, and we were really good, so I had an attorney here in town write up an agreement. I didn't look at that carefully, and I had to send over the guy. And the guy called me back and said, man, said, this makes me sound like a crook. He said, you're asking for, you know, all these protections and things out of me. He said, you know, I've known you all my life. And I said, yeah. So I called the attorney back. He said, I'm really not antagonistic against this guy. I do trust him. And let's make that language a little less noxious there in some of the things we're saying to him. And we'll keep the agreement there, but, you know, let's back out of the antagonistic side of that just a bit. It looks antagonistic. Let's not be antagonistic about it. But like you said, I guess after a while you get kind of cynical about this thing.
Yeah. Well, I rarely do a meeting where I don't tell my client, I'll say, look, I get paid to be paranoid. That's my job. I'm supposed to sit in the room and be the paranoid guy. And so at the end of the day, you know, my client is my boss and I do what they tell me to do. So I feel like our job as attorneys is to sit there and point out the, well, what if this happened? What if this happened? At the end of the day, if a client says, look, this is too much, or I don't want to address that, or I know, and a lot of times our client knows the other party. Like, you knew your friend in that situation probably better than your attorney did, right? So your attorney did his job. He pointed it out. And you're the boss. You said, I don't need this in that. I appreciate it. I don't need this in that situation. And we, you know, back off. We do so many deals that, you know, I don't like to be a deal killer. So that's not, I never want to kill a deal by, you know, having too much fine print or something like that. So we try to point out what we can and leave it up to the client.
Talking with an attorney here, back in just a moment. You're listening to Driven to Business. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Patrick Norris, who's a managing partner with the Atlanta Law Group. By the way, Patrick, give us your web address or how folks can get in touch with you.
Sure. You can. Our firm's website is www.atllawgroup.com. You can email me at Patrick or P. Norris at ATL Law Group directly if anybody, you know, wants to follow up after the show.
All right, good deal. And by the way, there will be links to Patrick on eddiemayfield.com. You can find it on the podcast and on a small blog about the program. So be sure and do that. Patrick, I sometimes kid my state legislator, who is also an attorney, by the way. He will sometimes be sending me emails. He'll be bragging about all the laws they passed in the last session. We passed this law and that law and the other law. And, you know, that's very proud of that. And I'll kid him and say, well, how many laws do you guys do away with? And he'll say, well, he's got him where he comes back and he says, well, you need to give me a list of what you want done away with. Of course, I'm too lazy to do that, so it doesn't. From your perspective as an attorney, even though you make a living doing this, are we an overregulated society? Are we becoming one?
You know, that's a good question, and I think about that a lot. I was having lunch last week with a friend of mine who is a landscape architect, and, you know, he was telling me, you know, just to if he has a new client, he's going to go in and, you know, design a landscape. He has to deal with four different departments at the city of Atlanta. And so I asked the question, I said, does that seem overkill to you just from, you know, from your experience. And, you know, he kind of, once we got to talking, it didn't necessarily seem like it. I mean, to me, it seemed crazy. But, you know, when he got into how many things can be impacted by that, it seemed to kind of justify itself in the conversation. But, you know, in general, if we're overregulated, I don't know. I think it's probably more political than it is for, you know, just from a daily practice for us. So, not to give you a vague answer, but I think it's something that always needs to be talked about. That's probably the best answer I could give you.
I was listening to Fox Business this morning, earlier this morning, and they were talking on there about banking regulations, and I forgot, I don't remember the number of pages that the host there was talking about of new banking regulations. This is federal that had come out this year, but it was a very large number of them. And she said that the main hiring right now by these large banks was in compliance attorneys. I guess it's good for the attorney business. But she was saying, you know, that seems odd that the main people they're having to hire are compliance attorneys to stay in compliance with laws that they do not understand. And I guess that's where a lot of us sort of look at that and go, you know, we want banks to be regulated, and we do want, you know, generally most of us think business ought to be regulated to some extent. But you know, there is somewhere you step over the fence. Like, wait a minute, that's absurd. You know, back over that fence a bit, and so they can still be a bank and still serve customers and so forth. You know, my one big city store. When I first moved into Norcross and opened a business over there, the guy in the suite next to me had a dumpster sitting over there. But I knew I wasn't going to use a dumpster very much, so I asked him. I said, "Hey, can we share this dumpster?" Because I noticed it was empty. And he said, yeah. He said, "I don't really need a full dumpster either. So let's share a dumpster and we'll do that." I said, "Fine." So we did for like several months. And then one day I got to work and I had this notice on the door telling me that I had an illegal dumpster in the back of our building. And if I didn't get rid of that right away, we were going to be paying these fines. So I called the city and said, "What's an illegal dumpster?" And they said, "Well, we have a contract with a certain dumpster, you know, company, and you have to use that dumpster." So, well, no one told me that. So, you know, that's the ignorance of that. It's no excuse. Of course, the new one costs more than the one I had and all that. But, you know, it's just, again, you sort of run into these silly little things in business. It's like, what? I have an illegal dumpster? It's like, you know, why is my dumpster illegal? You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we're only going to see more of it. That's my guess, just the way, you know, I mean, before we started this practice, I worked with two other law firms doing very similar things. And, you know, we now, that's one of the things we advertise, you know, so we do compliance. I mean, it's literally right, become a right practice area for us. And that's something that, you know, in the first couple years when I was getting started as an attorney, you didn't see people advertising that. But, you know, there's so many, depending on what your business is, there's so many different things that you have to comply with. You know, we handle a lot of just literally, you know, annual registrations with the state government. So they're very simple filings, but it's just the business owner doesn't have time to stop and do it. And right. So it is, and I don't really see that changing.
You know, as an attorney, is there a particular, either state or federal or local, I guess, law that you say, man, we need to have a law about this? Is there some problem you see that we really do need legislation to fix?
Yeah, you know, going back to the last comment there, I think there's so much of it right now. I don't know if I can pick one out that's not out there. I mean, I really can't say I have one off the top of my head. I mean, even last week here in the state of Georgia, you know, they just passed the, I don't know if you guys saw this, the Todd Gurley law. I'm a Georgia football guy, but now, you know, as a result of that, there's now a law that if you are, you know, if you entice a college athlete to, you know, do what Todd Gurley did, it's now a crime. So, you know, there's one for that now too. So I don't know if there's one in particular.
Yeah, that was a kind of a sad story about that. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of us said, well, you know, some friends that are college athletes, they said, you know, they do take you in, explain all this to you. Wasn't like he didn't know this. And they'll say, yeah, but he's a kid and young guy and he got, you know, this booster snookered him. So who knows? It might, but like you said, there is a law about that now. Hey, what should I, Patrick, as a small business owner, just operating a business over in Norcross, Georgia, and we also are in upstate New York and in Pennsylvania. But is there anything that I really ought to look over my shoulder about in terms of possible litigation against me? Something that you would say, hey, you'd be sure you've got this nailed down.
Well, I think compliance, to go back to that, I think compliance is important because it is something that is you know, so important, and there is so much of it, and I don't see it going away. I think it's something that people just have to go ahead and integrate into their mindset as a business owner, because what it does when you're uncompliant, and this can be, you know, it can be something really small, like a $25 fine at the city level, or it can be, you know, a large fine to the Department of Revenue or the IRS. So I think, you know, those types of speed bumps where you just get that random notice in the mail where you owe a late fee or you owe some penalties or something, it can be such a hindrance to the positive things you have going on with your business. I do think that is important. Beyond that, I think probably the next thing, and that's one of the things that separate us from a lot of other corporate attorneys, is we put such an emphasis on the trust and estate planning here that, you know, I think for a business owner, once your business gets to a certain level of success and you've been able to pull assets out of your company, it's, you know, am I doing the right things for me and my family to protect what I've built out of the business so that if something goes wrong with the business 10 years from now, you know, I don't forfeit everything I've already pulled out. So having a good estate plan that's asset protected is very important to business owners, because I do think, you know, we are in a very litigious time and people are constantly looking to go after attorneys, doctors, bankers, business owners. Those types of people are targets.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I was kidding you earlier about some of the negative sides of lawyers, but the truth of the matter is, you know, as a person in a technical business like us, with, you know, and you have people like me whose background is engineering, and so that's what I do, and you know, I started a business sort of out of that. I wasn't some MBA that went the other way and started a business. It sort of grew up from a technical standpoint, and there are a lot of people like that. We're all pretty good at that part of our business. We understand that part of our business. We know how to, in our case, go out and apply and repair and service and tune motor drives and make industrial machines do what they're supposed to do and make the widgets they're supposed to make and communicate like they're supposed to communicate with the whatever system it is. And we know how to do all that. What we don't know how to do is things like estate planning, because I never thought about that, you know, when we get started. So that's when we come to guys like you, say, okay, you know, well, how do I keep the government from taking this? How does this work? You know, because it's just things I don't know. And that is a great role that you guys play. And I think it is something any small business owner, I do tell them you should absolutely take care of that side of your business. And the other thing we'll talk about after the break is that you have to be careful if you have employees like we do. You have to be very careful in that area there, not to step on the wrong toes in there. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield, here every Saturday at 11 here on Atlanta's Biz 1190. Back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Patrick Norris. Patrick is a managing partner with the Atlanta Law Group, and you can find them at atllawgroup.com. So go there and check them out. Also, there'll be links to Patrick on eddiemayfield.com, both on the blog about the program and on the podcast. Incidentally, today's program will be podcast, if you missed the first part of it, on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. Patrick, we've been talking a little bit about just the idea of business owners being careful about litigation and so forth. You know, one of the things that until I got in business, I don't think I really had appreciation for. I've been involved in a few lawsuits, both as a defendant and as a plaintiff. And you'd mentioned that you rarely get to court. I've never had a single case actually go to court that I was involved in. Now, some of them have been very annoying, I have to tell you. You're getting, because of the discovery and all that, it's just I've kind of learned it's just a game you have to sort of play. To an extent, but that's pretty common, isn't it, that they never get to court?
It is very common, and you know, even though I say we don't go to court, we do get caught in a lot of you know, in our general counsel role for companies, we do get caught in a lot of disputes, but we just don't go to court. We have, you know, a handful of small solo practitioner type attorneys who do nothing but trial work. So, you know, a lot of times we'll be the initial phone call on a dispute, and we'll reach out to the other side and try to work it out. And a lot of times we're successful in doing that. If we're not, then we'll bring in the expert to go to trial. But, you know, I'd say and then, of course, obviously, once it gets to the trial, guy can still settle. But, you know, it's probably over 50% of the times that, you know, if we get a phone call that, you know, there's a dispute, we'll get it worked out before even having to involve a trial lawyer.
You know, also part of my education, you might laugh at this, but, you know, we got involved in a collections dispute with a guy over in Mississippi, and I ended up going to court over there two or three times, And we won the case. We won the case and got a judgment several years ago. I have yet to get a nickel back from I learned that some people, when a judge says pay, they still don't. I mean, you know, and this guy ended up being in a, as it turned out, he ended up being in jail, federal prison for wire fraud or something on another charge anyway by the time I finished, our case got finished. So, you know, those are just little educational things. I had to figure out that it would have been less expensive if I just let that go. You know, although yep. there's some every bit of you says, no, I can't. He owes me the money. Yeah, he absolutely owes us the money. But you just have to make those kind of decisions sometimes.
It's definitely part of the analysis. You know, it's one of the things you got to look in on the front end is, you know, unless you, you know, I've had clients that say, I just want that judgment. I just want the piece of paper because I'm going to frame it and put it on the wall. So sometimes if that's what you're going for, that's great. But other than that, sometimes they don't have a whole lot of meaning.
I think some of us, and you probably have to calm us down occasionally about this, you know, you get sort of emotionally involved and say, this guy stole money from me and I don't care what it takes, but that's really... In my better moments, I back off and say, you got to be reasonable about this. I mean, you know, how much time, money, and your mental energy are you going to spend doing this?
Yeah, usually once we bring in that trial lawyer and he requests that retainer, people will right. sober up pretty quick.
Right. that's a very good point. Hey, just for a real quick, since you do small business and tax planning and stuff, give us a quick rundown, and maybe there's not too much of a difference, but you know, in my company, and again, I did attorney's advice years ago, we're a corporation. I'm a sub-S corporation, but our various locations are all a separate corporation. Did that again, advice of attorney and CPAs, but give us a quick rundown on maybe when you should be a corporation and when you should be an LLC, for instance.
Well, yeah, so the corporation, you know, the LLC was created basically to make it, it's the same liability protection as a corporation, but it's a lot more easy. It doesn't have the corporate formalities that a right. corporation does. So a corporation, you know, typically you're going to have a shareholders who vote on the board of directors, and then the board of directors will vote on the officers. Well, you know, if I'm a one-man corporation, it seems kind of silly to make me, you know, appoint myself as the board and then appoint myself as president, secretary, vice president. So the LLC kind of lets you just have a manager. So a lot of times, you know, that's one of the first questions we'll ask: how many owners are there going to be? What's your growth plan? And if you know, if you've got somebody that comes in and it's just them and a business partner, and they think that's kind of where they're going to stick, then an LLC is probably going to make sense. If it's something where they want to start off with four or five guys and raise private equity and end up with, you know, 15, 20 shareholders, then they're probably going to outgrow an LLC. They're going to need that board of directors and the, you know, officers and those types of things.
How hard is it, like, you know, again, being the in a privately held corporation, how hard is it for someone suing you to, you know, I guess the term is pierce the corporate shield and come after you on a personal level outside of the corporation?
Well, it's pretty tough. I mean, if you're abiding by corporate formalities, and that is kind of where it gets scary. You know, a lot of people will set up their LLC and we'll give them some basic guidelines, you know, keep a separate bank account, you know, don't commingle your personal assets with your business assets, and we'll give them that advice on the front end. But what they do after that, you know, a lot of clients we don't hear from for a year or two right. after we set up their LLC. But, you know, in general, if you're doing the right thing and you're keeping it separate and you're operating behind the company, you know, you have business cards and you use letterhead and things like that, you know, it's rather tough unless you just do something really egregious in a personal capacity.
There's a quick question here. Are you tell us about your a lot of attorneys, as we all know, are quite involved in politics. Our present governor here in Georgia is an attorney, for instance. Mm-hmm. Are you politically active at all?
I'm not personally. You know, I just have not personally. I mean, you know, my partners are more than I am, and I think I'm probably the exception. You know, I'd say I'm political in the sense that I don't get in the middle of it, and that's about it for me. I mean, I, you know, have my own personal views, but I'm also very independent thinking, so I'm not, you know, terribly torn towards one side or the other. I try to look at everything, you know, the situation, and try to make my own decision. I enjoy doing that. So because of that, it just doesn't really, it's not something that I've been sucked into, but, you know, we have a lot of clients that are lobbyists, and, you know, we have a lot of companies that use lobbyists. So I get it and I understand the system, but, and I also work too much. I'm a 60 to 70 hour a week. So I don't always have time for extracurricular stuff.
That's good or bad. I guess it's good. Yeah. Patrick, you do run, a law business is like, it's a very special business, but it is a business like any other business at the bottom line, aren't it? It is. And you need clients. You got to keep them happy. You need good employees. In your case, I would imagine both clerical and attracting good legal talent. Let's start with the clients. Is there a demographic that your clients fit into, or are they pretty broad based?
You know, our clients for the most part tend to be younger folks. So, we work with a lot of, certainly not everybody, but the kind of client that really values the way we operate are, the millennials, X and Y generation, right. Business owners who appreciate our flexibility and communication. You know, we're happy to get on a Skype call. We're happy to work by phone and email if they don't want to, drive to our office. So that's typically, especially in Atlanta, that's who's attracted to us. We do work all across the state, and we, have larger families that we work with in South Georgia and things like that. But here in Atlanta, it tends to be that kind of on the go people who are just like us that appreciate a text message, at 8 o'clock at night if they right. ask you a question.
Right. How do they find you? How do they find out about you?
Well, we do some online marketing, but, we've been just blessed to have a really good network. We have a lot of accountants and financial planners who are, really outstanding professionals that have been really good to us. So for the most part, it's word of mouth, network. We also get a lot of referrals from our own clients. We have people who come here and get their estate planning done, and then they send their neighbors back or their daughters or, whatever it is. So for the most part right now, it's word of mouth.
You had mentioned earlier about advertisements on buses and things like that. I don't see it. My parents live in Alabama, and I go over there, and they're, I don't know if it's just because of what I see over there or if it's actually different, but they have the most silly lawyer ads on television I've ever seen in my life over there. So I would look at that and think, why would you ever call a lawyer that stood on TV, with a silly hat on or something and talk like a moron? I don't know why. If I want a lawyer, that's not who I'm going to call. But I guess these guys do okay. I don't know. What do you think just generally about lawyers advertising just in general? That used to be a big no-no when I was a kid. You never saw that.
Yeah, it's changed a lot, but it's something that we're constantly aware of, especially when I was starting out my practice. It's something that is one of the first things that I wanted to understand, what can I do and what can I not do. But, I think I'm assuming it's successful. Like I say, ours is mostly word of mouth. And in general, you don't see a ton of I don't think the corporate lawyers in general do a ton of advertising. But, I guess it works for those guys.
How I don't know the word, if the word customer service is a good word. In our business, we talk about customer service a lot. And we're very proud of our customer service at EMA and the way we do it. We actually measure it and compare ourselves to other people and all that kind of stuff. But there is some, it's like a doctor or anybody else, you do need to satisfy your clients. How do you train your folks to do that? Or is it on the fly, or how do you do that?
Well, I think I was fortunate because growing up in a small town, there was never a stranger to me. So, right. And my parents did, really emphasize that with me. They were always, impressed upon me the importance of going up to somebody, introducing yourself and shaking your hand. But, there's absolutely, we have guys coming through here that some of them get that naturally, and some of them, you kind of have to train them to do that. But, with what we do, customer service is the most important thing, without a doubt. All of our business owners are, again, they're very demanding people. They're very type A, very driven people, and they have checklists just like I do. And, if I'm on their checklist, they want it off their list so that they can move on to the other thing. I joke that since I started my own practice, I've never had to set an alarm clock. My phone just starts ringing at about 6 o'clock in the morning, and with multiple business owners calling, eventually one of them will send me something that's serious enough to where I can't hit snooze anymore. So, just keeping being responsive to those guys is probably the most important thing that we do.
It is kind of a culture. I mean, you have to, in a company or a practice like yours, you have to sort of have a culture of customer service, because you're right. Some people, maybe like you, you have that kind of natural, your parents taught that, but you can't depend on that of everybody, because not everybody was raised like that. And some people are just more natural withdrawn. They don't see it as being unfriendly, but it's perceived as being unfriendly.
Yeah, we do a little bit. You know, we probably could do more, but we, you know, we definitely stop during the week and have, you know, a 30-minute meeting at least once a week, and sometimes we'll do individual meetings with individual, you know, attorneys here and talk about something like that, like, you know, how do you present yourself, or, you know, what's your elevator speech, if what do you say if somebody asks you, you know, what you do for a living. So we try to emphasize that here, but like you said, it's something that some people, you know, you just have to, you can't take it for granted that they just naturally understand how to do that.
Absolutely. It's a cultural thing, whether it's a law practice or a company like mine, or for that matter, walking into a service station, customer service is very important. You're listening to Driven to Business. One more segment to go. We're talking with our attorney, Patrick, from Atlanta Law Group. Stick around. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield, and we are talking with Patrick Norris, who's a managing partner with the Atlanta Law Group. You can find Patrick at atllawgroup.com. Go there and check him out. Patrick, what's the most interesting case that you've either been involved with or you've seen that really just intrigued you?
Oh, that's a tough question for me because all mine are so boring. You know, we have we just sit around and push paper all day. We don't get the juicy stuff. You know, we do get to do some cool deals. You know, we have a tad of sports and entertainment practice here, so we get to do some cool deals with that. We have a, you know, get to do a little bit with NASCAR and some stuff like that. So we see some cool stuff coming through like that, but, you know, we don't have the big dramatic family law cases, the big nasty divorces and all that kind of stuff. So it's mostly just, you know, guys that come up with new ideas. You know, we will get the call for that every now and then where they've got a new concept that's kind of cool. So sometimes I feel like I'm on Shark Tank. I get to, you know, hear all the different ideas and think what's going to work and what doesn't. But without getting too specific, you know, those tend to be the types of things that, you know, excite us.
You know, Patrick, I don't have a law degree, but I have read all of John Grisham's novels, so I'm pretty up to speed.
Yeah, we don't get those. We don't get the murders.
Hey, this is going to sound a little bit crass, but is the legal business not your practice necessarily, but the overall, the legal business, is that an expanding or growing business, or is it are there too many lawyers out there right now?
Well, you know, I think from what I understand, you know, there was when the Great Recession hit in 2009, you know, there was, which was when I graduated in 2009, and, you know, I think 25% of my class got a job, and that was never really corrected. Law schools kept taking the same number of people. I understand that it's a lot better now. Where I see the biggest change that I see coming is the separation between big firms and small firms, kind of coinciding with what we're seeing in society. I think you're going to have fewer and fewer high-end law firms at the top levels that are competing over the biggest corporations, and there are so many people leaving law school that either by choice or by necessity are starting their own practice that I think you're going to see a big separation there, where you have a lot of very small firms or either solo practitioners who are servicing a lot of small businesses and a lot of families.
You know, I think that may reflect our American society in general. I think the internet, and not just the internet, but all the interconnectivity that we have now have allowed, you know, I don't know if you remember, you may be too young to remember, but there was a time when working out of your house was something you never want to tell anybody you did. That sounded like you were a bum or something.
Right.
Working out of your house. But, you know, now there is no stigma attached to that at all anymore. So many people work out of their houses.
Yeah, and I could easily see. I don't know the time frame necessarily, but 10 or 15 years where a small business owner, you know, gets on Google, searches the type of attorney he needs, and he's on a Skype phone call within, you know, 5 or 10 minutes getting the legal advice that he needs, where he's paid up front, you know, by PayPal or whatever the payment processing is.
Right.
You know, that's where it's going.
What do you think about, you know, again, with the technology age where, you know, people used to use attorneys for everything, but now you can go, like if I want an agreement about a rental agreement, and I say I'm renting property, I can go Google rental agreement and I can download one. You know, it's boilerplate for sure, but I can download that and then me and the guy can sign it, and no attorneys involved. Does that cut into attorneys' businesses? Is that something that's? And I know you're probably not in favor of that, but I'm just saying, in real life, does it cut into the business?
I think if any attorney had told you that, you know, LegalZoom didn't change the game, at least at our level, not being the King and Spaldings and the Austin and Byrds of the world, but if, you know, anybody below that told you that LegalZoom didn't change the game, they'd probably be lying to you. Absolutely. You know, it's turned legal a lot of legal services are now commodities. People,
right.
I know for a fact when they call me, they're calling three different law firms and they don't care where I went to school. They don't ask me that. They want to know how much I'm charging and how my fee structures are, and they're shopping my will versus five other people.
Right.
That's all there is to it.
Patrick, what's the most enjoyable part of being an attorney?
Well, for me personally, I love my clients. It keeps me excited because I do get to see so many new ideas and new challenges. I mean, I don't do the same thing every day necessarily because business owners, you know, have things that pop up. So I think it's the variety and the different personalities that we get to work with.
I think, yeah, so in other words, working with the people, basically, and what that seems to be true in almost any business, because I think, you know, the legal business, like our business is more of a, you know, engineering, working on technical stuff, and that's fun, too, at some level. But, you know, what I think when people look back at it, what they really do seem to enjoy is the business. You know, I've been an expert witness in two different legal cases. I didn't volunteer for either one of them. I got subpoenaed. And felt completely unqualified to do it, and told everybody there I thought I was unqualified to do it when they asked me to do it. But you know, you get in there, and it's like it's this grueling process of being asked questions all day long, and just question after question. And it seems to me after a while the questions start repeating, but I know they're slightly – the attorney's looking for slightly different little nuances of – the answer, and I'm being as honest as I can be, but I forget what I've said. You know, and the guy said, oh, you said before. I said, well – I don't know why I said that. I'm tired. So, you know, but, you know, for a lot of us, the whole legal side of things, you know, when I get every time I've ever gotten like a served with either something to tell me to appear in court or served with, the fact that somebody has filed a litigation against us or something, it always gives you a knot in your stomach because I'm stepping into a world of which I'm absolutely, I might as well be on the moon. I mean, I'm absolutely alien world to me.
Oh, yeah. I say that checking the mail is the most nerve-wracking part of the day because you don't know, you know, you're waiting on that notice or that complaint or whatever it is to be in there.
Right.
So but people also, you know, a lot of attorneys will use that against people as they, you know, the threat of a lawsuit can get you that
right.
same knot. And a lot of times that's, you know, can be effective in reaching a settlement or working something out is, you know, having somebody think that they're going to have that feeling.
It is. However, again, something I've learned along the way, that's not a bluff you want to play.
No, and it wears off. It does.
Yeah.
It's a 48-hour, 72-hour effect, and sometimes it can make the situation worse. So, you know, again, not something that we're big fans of, but it's something that you have to be aware of.
My boss out in Texas years ago, this is a long time ago, a guy came into him and said, and he was arguing with us about something, and I happened to be sitting in there, and he said, you know, well, you can either give me this, you know, you can pay me or you can pay the attorneys. And my boss at the time said, well, I can't stand you. I'd rather pay the attorneys.
Well, we get some of that too. We're okay with that.
Yeah, right. Did you have along your way, your path, is there a mentor or a particular person that sticks out that kind of taught you the ropes and what to do?
Yeah, you know, even when I was in law school, I worked for a solo practitioner one summer, and right out of law school, I worked with a solo practitioner as well, and then I eventually did go into more of a mid-sized firm where I was, you know, 10, 15 attorneys, but, you know, I don't necessarily keep in touch with those guys, but I think, you know, working in a small firm setting, at least for a summer, is pretty invaluable where you can be, you know, directly involved with a guy who is, you know, willing to, most of the times those guys will let you get more experience. You're not just, you know, the 10th man down the hall. You're right in the middle of cases. And my partner now as well, you know, my partner's 15 years older than me, but even the ability to, you know, work on bigger cases, even at this point in my career, you know, there's always opportunities for those guys to be mentors and show you how to keep yourself out of trouble.
Yeah, I've never worked in anything but a small business environment. So I relate to that very well. What I don't relate to is a large environment. I have you know, many friends, acquaintances, and families that have worked for very large companies, and they'll be going telling me about all the politics and the way, you know, that you have to this guy doesn't talk to you because he'd be seen talking to you, then that might hurt his career. And I've just never been involved with anything like that. I don't understand it, but it is fun. Hey, Patrick, you're a great guest. Thanks for coming on the program.
I appreciate it, Eddie. I really had a great time.
Remind you, we're talking with Patrick Norris. And again, you can get in touch with Patrick at atllawgroup.com, or again, you can find him on eddiemayfield.com. We have links to him. Patrick, thanks for being here. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's Business Radio, Biz 1190. We're the best business radio in Atlanta. See you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.